Welcome back to Wellness and Dentistry. I am one of your hosts, Dr. Kyle Stanley. I am a dentist, a tech entrepreneur, a speaker, and a researcher. And I am joined here by your other co-host, Dr. Martin Mendelson, and my very good friend. He is a disabled dentist, a coach, a speaker, and a thought leader. And together, Martin and I have helped thousands of dental professionals pursue wellness and dentistry through this podcast, through our in-person courses, through our coaching, our online courses. You can find us all over the place. So today we're going to talk about a subject that I don't think many people talk about, but how your superpower can become your Achilles heel. And before we get into that, if you haven't signed up for our Lightside Live course, which is happening in November of 2024, depending on when you're listening to this, go to wellnessanddentistry.com, go to our links, and you'll find our Lightside Live course. This is our two-day in-person workshop. It's a transformational 2 days, and we just have so much fun with dentists from around the world. So make sure you go there. So Martin, welcome. Good to see you again.
Good to see you.
And let's talk about this discussion here. How can your biggest superpower, the thing that people strive for and people admire you for, can also be your Achilles heel and bring you down? And let's talk specifically for we dental professionals.
Yeah. So I think that part of this actually begins in dental school, right? Because we're looking to be so exacting, tenths of millimeter, hundredths of millimeters in some cases. And so the superpower for being detail oriented and want to provide great dentistry can become so all encompassing that we're never happy with the result. And so that's one example, and that can actually waterfall to other areas of our lives too. Like, you know, the kitchen counter is never clean enough, or the lab is never put together well enough, things of that nature. So I think that's one example of a superpower when it's overused can end up starting to work against us, because I'm certainly not sitting here saying that we should be compromising or saying, oh yeah, that's good enough. But there comes a point where it is good enough for anybody's standards, and we need to be intelligent enough to really see that for ourselves.
So I hear two things, and I want a devil's advocate against what you just said too.
Yep.
And I also want to ask some questions about it. Okay. So one thing that I think a lot of dental professionals will say to that is, well, I'm a lifelong learner. I want to have personal growth. I want to get better. Mm-hmm. I want to constantly get better. What's so bad about that?
So I would say there's a great book by Dr. Tal Ben-Shahar called Pursuit of Perfect. And it talks about one of the things it talks about is the cost of pursuing perfection, because none of us are going to be perfect. And so I think that there's of course always a place for lifelong learning. I guess my point is that when it goes from learning to self-criticism, when it goes from growth to acumen, that's where I draw the line. This goes back to Carol Dweck's work that we've talked about a number of times, her book Mindset, where it's, did I fail in the execution of that restoration, or am I a failure because it didn't come out the way I wanted it to? So I guess I love your question. It's very intuitive. I'm towing a line between being a growth-minded lifelong learner and being critical of our prowess as a dentist.
How do we know at what point we can be happy with our work? Do you know the question I'm asking? It's like, let's say I'm just out of school and I know I don't have all the skills.
Right.
Now I'm a few years in, I'm starting to feel pretty good about it, but I still want to get better. I'm still measuring in tenths of a millimeter. I'm still having some challenges. How do I know when I can just be proud of myself? Do you know what I'm saying? Do you know what I'm asking?
Well, I think to answer the last statement first, we should all be proud of ourselves because we've become dental professionals. We're in practice. We're helping people get out of pain, you know, achieving aesthetic outcomes, et cetera. So we always need to be proud of ourselves, period. What I would say is we all do the best we can with the skills we have at the time. And that's physical hand skills, that's verbal skills, that's emotional intelligence skills, that's everything there is. And so if you can say to yourself, have I done the best I can? If the answer is yes, then we're good. It's that simple.
And it doesn't mean that you can't strive to get better.
Nope, not at all.
No, I think everybody is striving to get better every day, at least 1%, yeah. 1%, right? Yeah. If you can get better, if you can constantly get better. But I think there's a hamster wheel that is associated with that, that I have seen with myself.
Yeah.
And I've seen with a lot of my colleagues. Mm-hmm. And some of that too may have to do with the hedonism treadmill, mm-hmm. to where you're constantly adapting to your life. Mm-hmm. And so you want something better, right? Your mm-hmm. practice mm-hmm. produced 600K. And now you mm-hmm. say, well, I want 800K.
Correct.
But 2 years ago, 600K would have been a dream.
Exactly.
And then you're at a million. And then you say, gosh, I really need to get to 1.2.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you have one practice and now I need two practices. And then you have nine practices and then I need 12 practices.
Yeah.
And some of that is just that hedonism that we yeah. have and that we can adapt to.
I think to buoy my point, I may have mentioned this before, but I have a client who's a really great clinician, single operator within his own practice, no associates, and is doing like $2 million a year. Mm-hmm. And I know he's a great clinician with great outcomes. And one of the things we were talking through from a coaching perspective is, you know, beating himself up when he does the best he can and presents treatment and the patient says no.
Mm-hmm.
And so it went into areas of, you know, I'm not good enough. Why didn't they want to go forward, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's like, okay, this is a great example of towing that line. It's like, we've got to look at the facts of the reality. It's, you know, did we do the best we can? Yes. Are we being successful at the moment? Yes. Do we feel we could have done anything different? No. Do we feel we could have maybe done something better? Okay, well, that's something we can talk about. But are we going to necessarily then beat ourselves up because we didn't get the outcome? So I guess, you know, not being attached to the outcome
mm-hmm.
is super critical, meaning, and I don't mean this to come off, we're not looking for good clinical outcomes. What I mean by not being attached to the outcome is the bridge between the physical outcome that you've produced and the way you're looking and feeling about yourself between your ears. That's what we've got to watch for.
Yeah, I like that message. And if you look back and say, we gave that patient a great experience, I did a comprehensive exam mm-hmm. and treatment plan, I sat down and my soft skills were great, I looked them in the eye, I gave them good expectations on what to expect, I was open about my fees, I gave them the expectation of what the time will be,
mm-hmm.
and they still said no, then I think you can go back to this idea of every patient isn't right for your practice.
Yeah.
And if it's a financial thing, also too, one thing I learned from our friend Emma, who's a photographer, but that was involved with Lightside for many years, is that we are not responsible for our patients' finances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's a very hard thing to separate.
Yeah.
But if you can get to that point and look back and say, look, I did this right, I did this right, I did this right, I did this right, and the patient still said no. All right. Well, this is a with or without you attitude, and there's going to be other patients that are going to want to say yes.
Yeah. And I'll go one farther. Not only are we not responsible for the patient's financial resources, we're also not responsible for how our patients filter what it is we say. And so we're all going to filter our experiences in life through the frame of our lives' experiences, right? And so almost every day, I quote Viktor Frankl about between stimulus and response, there's a space. And so you can make a choice of how you respond to that stimulus, because everything in life is technically neutral. It's our thoughts that give that situation power. And so that patient may have had very difficult interactions and maybe poor clinical outcomes for whatever reason with previous clinicians. You can't change that. And so we have to understand and respect that they're then therefore going to come in and interact with us through that filter. And so regardless of good, bad, or indifferent communication, good, bad, or indifferent clinical care, they may in fact interpret that differently. And by the way, the antithesis is also true. If they've always had great experiences and great clinical outcomes, they're likely going to take things more with a grain of salt. So it works both ways.
Another thing, as we're talking about not being responsible for certain things on the patient, one thing that just came to me that I really struggled with is not being responsible for the situation that they bring into our practice.
Yeah, exactly.
And I've talked to you and I both have talked to many dental colleagues that since we want to help people so bad, we feel like we have to bend in order to make it work for this patient.
Yeah.
And we have to separate ourselves from that. Mm-hmm. We were not there. We can't go home and brush their teeth. We can't smack the candy out of their hand. We can't, you know, pull the soda.
I just had a fun visual of you doing that, like, whack.
Yeah, yeah. We can't pull the soda that they drink every single day out of their hand. We can't take the lemon out of their lemon water that they drink every single day for health, right? And I was very guilty of this. Patients would come in. They needed a lot of work. It was expensive. It was time consuming. It could be uncomfortable at times. And I would give them a fee and they would either think it's outrageous or say they couldn't afford it. And I would say, well, let me think of what I could do. Could I do this for free or could I use a different lab? Or maybe I don't do it as high to this standard and I can really make it work for them and I can tailor make this treatment plan that'll work for them just because I want to help them so bad. Mm-hmm. And most of the time that got me in trouble. Most of the time that didn't work out for the patient or me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, everybody has their own interpretation of what's a lot of money. We just do, right? And so, and that's a value-based comparison. I was watching the television this or online or watching television, I don't remember which, and I saw Chevrolet is now coming up with an EV electric vehicle that's $34,000 that has a 300 plus mile range.
Wow.
You can buy that for $34,000 or you can buy a Tesla Model S for six figures.
Mm-hmm.
Which you're going to buy. Now, you could argue the bells and whistles may be different, et cetera, but at the end of the day, it gets you from A to B based on a charge from the wall.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I mean, value was something I never heard anybody talk about until I heard Christian Coachman speak when he started talking about digital smile design. Mm-hmm. And he always talked about perceived value.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't true value. It was perceived value. Mm-hmm. And this is why he always did. He did mock-ups for patients and showed them what it's going to look like in their own mouth. And they said, yeah, I want that. And you said, okay, well, if you want that, that's going to be $30K. But if you showed that, if you told them $30K before they saw it in their own face, they say $30K, I can't do any. There's no way I could do that, right?
Exactly.
You show them that, and they find a way to make it happen. Now, there's a range on that, right? If it was $60K or $300K or $3 million, there's going to be a cutoff at some point where it's just not possible.
Yeah, it's, you know, Dr. Speer often talks about similar concepts relative to you never, ever, ever give a patient a fee at the beginning. It's the worst thing you could possibly do. And so you take them on a tour of your mouth, take them on a tour of their mouth, talk about the benefits, you know, what you see, benefits of treatment, consequences of no treatment. This is what I feel is urgent. This is what we can wait on. This is something, you know, that we'll, you know, keep an eye on for later. You know, well, how much is that going to cost? Well, about the cost of a car. Well, what kind of car, you know? So it's a value proposition, right?
Yeah.
And it always has been.
One of the biggest things with this topic of your superpower becomes your Achilles heel that I saw in myself and that I see in many of our colleagues is this idea that we are good at achieving.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at any of us dental professionals, at least scholastically, right? Mm-hmm. At least if you check off boxes that our grandparents would have liked us to achieve, we're good at that, right? We're good at getting A's or B's. We're good at getting into college. We're good at getting into dental school. We're good at passing tests. We're good at getting jobs. We're good at, I mean, some of us are good at talking with people and being likable. Yeah. And so in general, we've achieved, and we get rewarded for that. We get rewarded in our communities by being respected, by being called doctor. We get rewarded by sometimes flexibility in our schedules. We run our own businesses. We get rewarded financially. You know, we're probably in the top 5% of earners in the country, in most every country or in the world. And I think the problem with this is that it feeds us more to achieve more, achieve more, achieve more, which sounds pretty good, right?
Yeah,
it's like, yeah, yeah, all of us would love to achieve more. However, I think it doesn't mean achieving in every aspect of life.
Oh, no.
It means achieving in business,
yeah,
in our profession, in our career.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened to me was I was so good at achieving in my career that everything else fell by the wayside. My health, my relationships, my soft skills. It was just everything that had to do with my career I was good at, and I ended up not really being good at anything else.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up. I mean, that's part of the reason why my coaching practice and my team cohesion practice is so busy, because there, what was the name of that book? What got you here won't get you there. And so, you know, what got us to any given point may not end up serving us over the long haul. You know, you and I were chatting before we got on here. We wanted to kind of talk about certain things relative to superpowers that can kind of get in your way. And so you talked about high achievers, right? So we're goal-oriented people. And so, and how did we get there, right? You know, we had stress tolerance. You know, did we have flexibility? Maybe, maybe not. And those are just two examples of composites that are within the confines of the emotional intelligence assessment. And so what's fascinating about that is, you know, there's a range of, I'm going to call it normal, that's based upon data. And, you know, when I run the assessment, I actually have to pick which range norm I'm talking about. Like, is this North America? I have clients in Australia, so I have to pick a different one. And it's based upon where you are in the world. And so if you've gotten where you've gotten today because you're really good at reality testing, which is a composite of emotional intelligence, which, by the way, was first coined by Freud. If you've been really good at reality testing to really look at all the details, but then you overuse that, then you get paralyzed because you're looking to, is this really going to happen? Is this really going to happen? Well, maybe it won't happen, blah, blah, blah. And you just end up getting paralyzed, right? Or if you're so flexible, you can't make a decision, right? Or if you have such high stress tolerance, you become unrealistic. And so that's when a superpower in the soft skill leadership world can actually become your Achilles heel, because I tell my clients, think of it like a muscle, like a bicep. Everybody's got one, but it's just a matter of how fit it is. And if it's, maybe we'll use lats. Maybe lats is a better visual example. Everybody has them, right? But if they're too fit, you can't put your arms down, right? And so emotional intelligence is the same kind of thing that can end up becoming your Achilles heel.
Yeah, well, I think about, as you're talking about some of those things, I'm thinking a word that summarizes them is balance, which can have positives and negative connotations, right? But from the muscle example that you were giving, I go to the gym fairly often, and I see guys that work out their biceps and their triceps and their shoulders, never work out their legs, right? Yeah. And, you know, they have like these chicken legs, right? So they're like top heavy and you know what I'm saying? I also thought of, when you were given that example, as far as balance, is sleep data. And people are probably thinking, what does that have to do with anything? Well, I'm big on sleep and airway and these kind of things. I'm listening to some other podcasts, and they were talking about, it was a sleep scientist. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about how sleep data is great, right? So you know when you slept well, why you didn't sleep well, what happened, how much REM sleep you were in, how much deep sleep, what time you went to bed, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. But he said the people that get obsessed with that, it will make them have anxiety about sleeping and they'll sleep worse. So it's like this terrible cycle where you learn a little bit about it, then you get obsessed with it, then you have anxiety about it because you're saying, you and I were talking before, and you said, "Oh, I didn't sleep that well last night."
Yeah.
But let's say that you were one of these people, and you looked and said, "Oh, well, it's because my REM sleep didn't start early enough, and so this and that." Mm-hmm. And so then today, you may have anxiety about tonight, and you may not sleep as well tonight. And so, I think it's that balance of knowing enough, aware enough.
Oh, yeah.
Not focusing on a singular thing.
Oh, 100%. And, you know, in the leadership realm, I'm glad you brought up the whole balance thing. I mean, when an individual is working through their emotional intelligence assessment, one of the most profound areas to focus on is the section called the balancing EI. So it's where can you balance out a really high level of reality testing? Well, maybe that's with optimism, you know, that things are going to work out, or you have really, really high stress tolerance. How can you actually, or let me say really low stress tolerance, how can you balance that out? Maybe with your high level of flexibility. And so it's always a balance of one versus the other. Self-regard, you know, if you have really, really high optimism, but you have lower self-regard, how can you balance that to bring your self-regard up by engaging that with regard for self? So there's always a balance there that we can employ and engage, so that a superpower doesn't become an Achilles heel.
Let's talk about stress tolerance, because you said dentists are good at stress tolerance, which I think is true, because it's stressful to do well in college.
Yeah. Right?
It's stressful to have to study when everyone else is going out and partying. Mm-hmm. It's stressful, especially in your 20s when you're in professional school, you're in dental school, and all your friends are already making money with their first jobs and, you know, buying houses and this kind of thing. And you're still this poor dental student that's studying on the weekends and doing your denture tooth setup, right, on a Saturday night. But why do you think that is, that we're good at stress tolerance, but so many of us suffer from burnout, depression, anxiety?
I think most of us are. I mean, we have to be careful. Not everybody is, right? But I can say, thinking back on all the evaluations that I've done, assessments rather, that I've done, people tend to score pretty high in the stress tolerance. And it's interesting too, because you know, one thing you didn't mention was the stress tolerance of making it through a difficult procedure and having to be the calm, cool, collected one. And, you know, the patient's bleeding, we got to get control of that, or the prep isn't going the way we want to. Okay, let's pause, take a breath, figure out what we can do to rectify this or to move forward or whatnot. And I think that to some degree, we get emotionally exhausted dealing with all of the things we need to be stress tolerant of during the day, that when it comes to something related to running the business or something personal with family, we've just kind of run out of juice.
So what I'm hearing from you is that it's dose dependent.
It seems to be, yeah. That's my subjective opinion, so I'm going to make that very clear, but it seems to be, yes.
Yeah, well, I would agree with that, because there is generally an age where people have burnout that I have seen. It tends to be 35 to 45 is kind of what I've seen. Now, we've had people in their 70s. We've had people that are dental students, people that are first year out of school. Of course, there's norms. There's a bell-shaped curve. And I think the general age is between that 35 to 45 range, right? And I've talked to a lot of dentists that have gone through it in the past. And I say, when was it? How old were you when you started going through burnout? And it generally tends to be around that age. And so that makes me also think that it is dose dependent. It's like you've hit a certain dose. You've done this for long enough to where you finally can't deal with it anymore.
Yeah.
It's like you're good at stress tolerance. Yes, I got through all those hard nights studying in college and in dental school. I got through being an associate. I got through starting a practice, and maybe I had to do a build out, or I had to remodel, and I had to fire people, and I had to hire people, and I had a patient that did this. And it just gets to a point where you can't do it anymore.
Yeah. And it brings up another interesting point too. I was just working through this in my book, actually, where, you know, life is not a game of dominoes. And so the fact that you had a water leak in operatory two and your hygienist and assistant called out sick, they're not related. They just are. And so there's no diminishing here the reality that the day was challenging. While at the same time, we have to be careful of saying to ourselves, things aren't going well because of X, Y, or Z. It's just a fact that X, Y, and Z occurred. And so you could say, well, Martin, that's semantics. And yeah, it is, because they're both trains of thought are just that, trains of thought. And so you have a choice. You can either go down into the dumps and be angry and frustrated and so forth, or you'd be like, you know what? I'm not happy about this. I certainly would have chosen a different day. And now what am I going to do to turn this around? It's two different trains of thought.
So in that specific case, what should the dental professional do? I think the first step would probably be have the awareness that this is happening, mm-hmm. and that you may be associating things together that aren't related.
Yeah.
Then what would be the next step in that case?
The next step would be just acknowledging that you're not happy about it. So the first step would be thinking about the things that are driving it, driving the frustration, we'll call it. Then you're going to go to, okay, well, what other things have happened today that have not been frustrating? And we look at those things. And then we ask ourselves the question, okay, which do I choose to focus on? Now, if you're really getting spooled up, as I've done and a lot of my clients have in the past, write it down. And what you'll end up seeing for most of us is that your list of positives outweighs the list of negatives. It's just that we give the negative stuff more emotional power because it actually has more emotional power. And when we start to recognize the positive stuff, it can help us to at least mitigate some of the feelings of lack of control to feeling more in the driver's seat because we're acknowledging the things that are going well.
So you're doing a reality testing
basically
of sorts, right? Mm-hmm. You're asking yourself, how true is this?
Mm-hmm.
You're putting it down and being able to visualize it and say, yep. Well, my family's still healthy. I got here okay. Mm-hmm. My practice still has a good day,
yep.
Like production wise.
Yep.
No one called in sick today.
Yeah.
Parents are still alive. I mean, you can look at so many other positive things.
Yeah.
And so you're saying, how true is this day that this whole day is bad?
Yeah. And there are things that we end up, if we're honest with ourselves, that we end up having taken for granted. And, you know, in this big lottery that is life, you could have ended up in a very different circumstance, in a very different country, in a very different socioeconomic position, but you didn't. And so it's not trite. It's not semantics. It's real. And so we can choose to focus on that stuff, or we can choose not to. It's not easy, but it is that simple.
Yeah. That's interesting. I like how you said that. It's not that easy, but it is
simple. Yeah.
I think there's a lot of things in the mental wellness world
mm-hmm.
that we can think about that. Even in the physical wellness world,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not that easy, but it is that simple.
Yeah.
From the physical standpoint, eat whole foods, avoid alcohol, avoid smoking,
mm-hmm.
exercise, right? Put priorities on your relationships, and mm-hmm. physically you will be better.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that's easy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have another suggestion too, and it's something anybody can go and take. There's an assessment called the Clifton Strengths Assessment, and it's by Gallup. And I believe over 30 million people have taken this assessment. And so it'd be very interesting for anybody listening to take it with their team members. You go on their website. Again, it's through Gallup. And I think it's like 50, 60 bucks per assessment, but it gives you an entire printout of your five signature strengths and the remaining lesser strengths is a total of 34. And so, you know, the title of this is, you know, when your superpower becomes your Achilles heel. It's fascinating because there's so many combinations, even people that, let's say, if their number one is communication, the descriptions of what comprises number one is not going to be the same, which is really fascinating because everybody's different. If we are leaning so hard on our, let's say, our communication ability, because we have really, really good case acceptance, and we don't acknowledge that other members of our team, which could include associates or other clinicians like hygienists, don't necessarily score as high there, then that becomes our Achilles heel, because we're using our level of achievement as a litmus test against others. And comparison is a thief of joy in both directions. And so that's another example of when, you know, your superpower becomes your Achilles heel, because we're all different. We all have different skill sets and levels of ability.
Yeah. How I really see as you're talking, it made me think of so much of this idea of your superpower becomes your Achilles heel is focus. So because we're getting positive feedback from something that is our superpower, whether that's our communication ability, the ability to achieve, we outwork other people, let's say, right? We work harder, we work longer, we work smarter. That we keep doing that more, and that's what we focus on because that's what is so great about us. And that was my thing too, is that I outworked people, I outstudied people, I out learned people. Like I was learning more than my other colleagues, and so that made my career go up higher. And because that's what then people started to praise me for, that was what I did more and more of. And I think for me, what's interesting now is a lot of the praise that I get from people when I go speak or I'm in front of other colleagues is so many times they'll tell me, hey, I love on your Instagram how I love seeing pictures of your kids.
Yeah.
It's so interesting that I thought, who the heck would want to see pictures of my kids? You know, like they don't know me, they don't know my family, whatever. But they see that as like a leading ability. They say, that's so cool that you've put effort into this and you make your kids a priority and your family a priority, because I know how busy you are. I know all the stuff you're doing with your research and your companies. And that's been so rewarding for me to change what I've been known for. I used to be known for, wow, you're traveling all over the place and you're doing this talk and you're starting this company and your practice. I saw that case you did. And that was cool. It made me feel good. But this makes me feel so much more to be known for something that is what my current priority is.
Right. Totally. You know, it's interesting because it kind of almost goes back to what I was saying before about everybody's going to look at it through the lens of their own filter. And so, you know, what is it telling you in a good way about that other individual, given the fact that that's what stood out for them, right? Because that's what caught their attention.
Yeah, it's showing me that that's their priority too.
Correct.
And this is someone that I would have kinship with, and it's allowed me to have a deeper relationship with my colleagues. So you know how it is, because you travel and speak a lot, that you walk in a room, you maybe know the organizer, maybe not, they just invited you, right?
Yeah.
And for me, talking about this topic, and when they come up to me and talk to me about what they see on my Instagram or family, whatever, it allows me to have a much deeper, instant relationship with them than what it was like before, when they would say, hey, I love what you're doing with implants.
Yeah.
I love the smile design stuff that you post about. It made me feel good too, just to get praise, of course. But it's something so much deeper, something so much more human that I could connect with. And so why I'm saying this is I'm trying to change my superpower, I think. My superpower before was achievement. Now, it doesn't mean that I'm not achieving now, but it means that that may be a byproduct of my new superpower.
What I'm hearing you say is you're looking to change the outcome through engaging your skill sets, right?
Yeah.
Because outcomes will always be lagging indicators of the process. And so that's kind of interesting, because so it's basically what you're saying is you're not changing who you are. You're changing what you're focusing on based upon certain priorities, like we talked about in our last episode.
Correct. Yeah. And then I guess to expand on that a little more, it's that so many of us are multifactorial, but where you put your focus, where you put your energy, tends to be where you achieve.
Yes.
And so much of us put our focus into achievement in general.
Well, and if we can really take a step back and not sit in judgment of others lacking in their ability to engage with the superpower that you hold, well, then we end up becoming this more engaged team that could be more successful than ever before, because 1 + 1 doesn't have to equal 2, it could equal 3 when we're really leveraging individual superpowers. And it's like, you know what, Doc, for in this specific example, don't talk fees, because like you shouldn't do that, because every time you do, you're going to discount it, which, you know, you don't want to do, and you end up kicking yourself. So let me handle that. Or, you know, I don't want you putting treatment plans together because, you know, your superpower isn't the detailed orientation that is required to do that. I'm going to handle that. And then you're going to handle the fees, and it's going to be just this brilliant concert engaging our individual superpowers. If it's your family, if you're really detail oriented and you like paying the bills and seeing where your money goes and seeing where you might be able to save or be more efficient here, knock yourself out if the other spouse doesn't want to do it, right? So it's not only engaging your superpower, it's acknowledging your superpower, and it's interacting with others to really hone in to the best you can what theirs is, to make everybody more effective and efficient and successful.
And it's funny, as we talk about this, this topic is expanding for me. And it's also going back to a lot of topics that we've talked about before that you and I harp on. And I think one of the things that I'm learning as we're talking about this is the first step may be awareness of what your superpower is. What are you good at? And then also going back to a previous topic when we talked about prioritizing values, is utilizing what superpowers you may have that help achieve the priorities or the priority of the values that you've made as well. And because there's a way of doing it negatively. So if you can use your superpower, and if you focus on that and say, I'm going to do this, 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 you could go the opposite way of where your values go.
And I have a theory relative to dentists, which is some of our biggest frustrations, clinical stuff aside for a moment, some of our biggest frustrations in running a practice and being a leader is because we keep trying to fit a square peg into a round hole, because we keep trying to engage in areas that are not our strengths, and we get frustrated. When we get frustrated, we don't achieve the outcomes that we're looking for, and it becomes this vicious cycle. It's one of the reasons why I want to start incorporating more Clifton strengths in some of these small groups that I'm thinking about launching, so that people understand what their strengths are, to then figure out what it is that they have to get done relative to leadership, so that they can understand, okay, wait a minute, if this isn't my strength, like dealing with payroll, why am I doing it? It's just causing stress. I can outsource that, and then it's going to reduce my stress. It's going to get done. It's going to get done more effectively, and everybody's happier. So, you know, the beating our heads against the wall, trying to do things that are contrary to our strengths is the antithesis of, you know, when your superpower becomes your Achilles heel.
Yeah. So. And I think to bring this episode into landing today is just this idea of knowing what your superpower is, understanding how it can do things well for you and it can do things poorly for you.
Yep.
And to generalize with dental professionals, most of us are good at achieving. We're good at hard work, working harder than other people, doing whatever it takes to get the job done. And that all sounds great. I mean, if you put that on a resume for any other job, that sounds amazing. But you can achieve yourself into failure. You can achieve yourself into depression.
Yeah.
Or anxiety, or you know, suicide, or any of these topics. It's like too much of a good thing.
Yeah, and I know everyone will agree with me because paging Captain Obvious number one, number two. I usually jokingly ask this in my presentations. It's like, could we do what we do as dentists without our team? No. Could our team do what they do without us as clinicians? No. So once we go through the exercise of self-reflection and really look into what are our strengths, what are our lesser strengths, et cetera, then let's extrapolate that, because we can't be successful without the other people on our team. So why not understand and harness their strengths? Because within a given team, you're almost assuredly going to have some folk that are stronger at one thing than others. Why not take advantage of that, right? And, you know, give people things to do that they want to do, that they're good at, that they're going to be more successful at. Like, holy smokes, that's a good day at the office, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So,
well, if I hope you guys enjoyed this. Yeah. I think I sure learned a lot. I mean, whenever Martin and I talk, we're always kind of learning as we're teaching, which is so great. And we really enjoy being here with you guys. If you haven't left us a written review, we would really appreciate this. We take a lot of time and effort to give you guys free content that you can listen to without having to pay anything. So all we ask is that you give us a written review on iTunes. And if you haven't joined us for Lightside Live, make sure to go to our website, wellnessanddentistry.com, go to our links and look for Lightside Live and come join us. Come hang out with us. I say this a lot, but we're so fun. We're so fun, guys.
We are.
Look at how much fun we are. Come hang out with us for 2 days in beautiful Southern California, when you're probably shoveling snow somewhere where you live, and it's going to be beautiful and sunny and we can go to the beach. Okay, well, we'll see you on the next episode of Wellness and Dentistry. Thanks for joining.
See you later.